Good evening. Welcome to Coast AM. I am Lisa Garr, and it is a privilege to be with you this evening. So it is considered to be the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history in Orlando, Florida. A gunman who pledged allegiance to the Islamic State opened fire at the Pulse nightclub early this morning in a shooting that left 50 dead and another 53 wounded. We are going to be joined tonight by best-selling author Marianne Williamson, whose latest book is called Tears to Triumph. And she talks about the spiritual journey of suffering and pain and addresses what can be done in this very, very deep period of grief we are in as a nation. We will be back with my guest, Marianne Williamson. I'm Lisa Garr. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. The mass shooting that occurred in Orlando, including the mass shootings in San Bernardino or Sandy Hook or Columbine, they leave us as a nation distraught. They leave us grieving. They leave us in fear and in pain. And tonight we are joined by Marianne Williamson, who addresses these very feelings of loss in her new book called Tears to Triumph. And luckily, Marianne was available to join us tonight at the last minute because, and beautifully, because her book addresses this very issue of this journey through suffering that she talks about in her book, Tears to Triumph. Welcome, Marianne. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Well, it is, I couldn't think of a better person to speak about this, especially since you and I just spoke about this on my radio show, about what it means to go through these journeys of suffering. We just had this conversation about the very journey of suffering. So when you saw the news of the mass shooting that occurred in Orlando, what were your first thoughts about what we are experiencing as a nation?
Well, my first thoughts were the same thoughts as everyone, of course, just horror on a human level. As the day has gone by, what I have thought about is that my fear is that we will not grieve, not really. We will not go deep enough into our sadness. What we tend to do with these things now is that we're shocked, we're horrified, we're sad for the victims. We grieve, but then we allow ourselves to go into a kind of numb state. We allow ourselves to become distracted. And as a consequence, we don't experience the kind of transformation that a level of deep suffering would give. Sometimes in life, especially in America today, we pour this cheap yellow smiley face over everything. We act like somehow being sad is wrong, and so we all just try to get happy again. And we've developed a kind of culture of depression because we're not happy. We all know this stuff is going on. We know that things are going in a terrible. It's almost like we're watching a slow motion
movie
car crash.
Yes,
at
yes.
This point. So I think that what's important right at this moment is that we hold on to our tears, that we hold on to the deep realization that something is so terribly, terribly wrong. How really insane it is, how insane it is that a man like that could get an assault weapon.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
insane it is when he pledged allegiance to ISIL. Well, if we hadn't attacked Iraq, ISIL wouldn't even exist. I don't think in this country, we're not moaning enough. I remember when Robert McNamara said before he died, he said that the Vietnam War was a terrible mistake. And I felt like if we were an emotionally and psychologically healthy country, we would have all just, the whole country would have shut down for 3 days. And we would have just yelled into our pillows and beaten our fists against walls. When you think of all the tragedy and all the people who died, and then the main architect says, yeah, well, it was a mistake. And I think the fact that we didn't do that, was directly tied to our relatively easy acquiescence when George Bush went into Iraq with the same kind of absurd military misadventure that Vietnam had been. So I hope that we hold on to our tears. I think, and when you talk about my book and what I've been talking about, what I've been thinking about a lot is how what we do in America today is that we are so afraid to suffer that we don't learn the lessons of our suffering. This is why we have this epidemic of casual antidepressant use. We call suffering a disease too often when it's not. You know, we've taken situational. They actually now the pharmaceutical companies and psychotherapeutic pharmacological industrial complex, I call it, they call situational depression a form of a disease to be medicated. The fact that this country is depressed today is the fact, if we're not depressed, that's what's mentally ill. That we be depressed. Sometimes your neurosis is more defined by what doesn't upset you than by what does upset you. So I think it's very mentally and emotionally and spiritually healthy that we're all very, very sad today. And what I hope is that this time, maybe, please, you know, we will hold on to it and move through the suffering to the place of that deeper commitment to really change things this time. We have an election season coming up. We're in an election season. We should be asking every congressional candidate, every senatorial candidate, and obviously in the presidential race, you know, whatever your thoughts are. For those of us who believe that assault weapons should be banned, boy, you know, I mean, people say, well, this man, you know, he would have found something. Yeah, but with an assault weapon, even if people in that club had had guns, for all we know, some of them might, but you don't have a chance to even reach for your gun when somebody's coming at you with a machine gun.
Right. It's definitely something that should not be used on our streets.
Well, but the point is, that's what the assault weapon ban is about. It should only be in the hands of military personnel. When you say it shouldn't be used on our streets, where would it be used? I mean, it only has one purpose, and that's to kill people. Mm. That's the only purpose for a machine gun. You know, I lived in Michigan, and, you know, it's a hunting state. So I have respect for that, and I have respect for the Second Amendment. I do think that the founders put it there because for the reason the conservatives say, so that the government could not have all the guns. I mean, there's truth to that, but they were not foreseeing machine guns. They were not foreseeing assault weapons. And then the whole issue of the creation of ISIL, the fact of that invasion and how our invasion of Iraq created this. For Americans to be crying about all this, horrified by all this, sickened by all this, it just shows we've got some mental health going on. Mm. And, you know, other countries look at us, especially the countries that have suffered so much since we did invade Iraq, you know, and people in cities in Iraq, and they go, oh, really? It's rough for you, is it? I mean,
Right. It's
the... What did we think, you know, that this stuff would never, you know, once you really understand the law of cause and effect, which is the law of karma, just spoken in Western language. You know, all the problems in the world, Lisa, are just this lack of reverence that we have towards the planet, towards each other, towards life itself. So
there's so many things that you've just said that are so important. Can we address the difference between sadness and fear?
Well, you know, in A Course in Miracles, it says that there are only two emotions, love and fear, and that all negative emotion is derived from fear. And so the Course in Miracles says that fear is to love what darkness is to light. Darkness isn't actually a thing. It's the absence of a thing. So you don't get rid of fear by hitting it with a baseball bat. You get rid of darkness by turning on the light. You don't get rid of fear by hitting it with a baseball bat, you get rid of fear by turning on the love. So sadness is, and all this that it produces it is the absence of love. So the issue is for us to love enough to make the changes that we need to make on this planet right now. And that's what this sadness can take us to. And this is true in our own individual lives too. And this is why the easy and casual pharmaceutical numbing of our of our sadness is not healthy. It's not helpful. I'm not talking about bipolar or schizophrenia right now. I'm talking about situational despair and the fact that we have medicalized it. You know, so what you've got right here, look what's happening in this country. You've got wars that are fought to serve the financial interests of the military-industrial complex. And then you've got guns that are that are sold to people that should not be sold to people to serve the interests of the gun manufacturers, financial interests of the gun manufacturers. And then you have all these people that are suffering because of both of those things. And then you have the medicalization of that problem to serve the financial interests of the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, the fact that we're all horrified, the entire culture at this point is predicated on ideas that are depressing.
Yes.
And so the fact that we're all depressed, this is the problem, I think, Lisa, with the fact that so much of our psychotherapeutic orientation has to do with the individual sufferer. But the individual sufferer is suffering what is in many cases a collective pain. You know, we have built a society that posits everything as random. You know, us as random, relationships as random, events as random. It posits that there is no transcendent meaning to it. It posits that we have no real brotherly connection of love or brotherhood or deep responsibility to be our brother's keeper. It posits more and more these days like there is nothing more important than a financial bottom line. And that's what all these things are about. There is nothing more important than the financial bottom line for the military-industrial complex. There is nothing mm-hmm. more important than the financial bottom line for gun manufacturers. Mm-hmm. There is nothing more important than the financial bottom line for big pharma. There is nothing more important than financial bottom line for fossil fuel companies. Where is the soul to find comfort? Where is the soul to feel like it even is in any way at home? And so the fact that people are sad, of course we're sad. The soul feels homeless here at this time.
And hopeless.
And hopeless because the entire, you know, Buddha said that nothing in the outer world can bring anything but temporary happiness. So our entire culture is a setup for despair. Because our culture, this consumer-based society that we have so attached ourselves to, not that it's bad to be attached to it, but, you know, we've lost all perspective here. We've just lost all perspective. We have allowed ourselves to just swerve from an ethical center to the point where the message of the society is that in order for you to be happy, you got to go do this, you got to go get that, you got to go make your dreams come true, make it happen, and then you'll be happy. But then so half your time is spent struggling for those things and mm-hmm. grasping for those things mm-hmm. because the society has said they'll make you happy. But then even once you get them, as Buddha said, outer things, the things of this world, can only bring temporary happiness at best. So then once you get those things, the fairy dust will rub off. They really are just idols that will crash. And so the other half of your time is spent in utter despair because the things you thought would make you happy didn't make you happy. And so we're all caught in this awful web. And the lack of reverence that is at the core of all this, we're not reverent towards the earth. We're not reverent towards the oceans. We're not reverent towards the sky. We're not reverent towards the food. We're not reverent towards the animals. We're not reverent towards the children.
Or each other.
We're not reverent towards each other.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we're not reverent towards any sense of any higher purpose or meaning. How could we not be sad?
Yes, and sadness is definitely something that I haven't heard a lot about. I've heard a lot of statistics, and I've heard a lot of the facts, which is definitely happening in major news outlets. But I haven't heard anything other than we must not be afraid, we must fight with pride, we must not stand down and be in fear. I've heard that, but I haven't heard anyone address the idea of this is sad and daunting and where we're going is not working.
Well, every time there's a mass shooting, we go through this. every time, and Congress does nothing. Because, you know, everybody says, well, and the core, the cancer beneath all these cancers, all these individual problems, is the undue influence of money on our politics. So you have the Citizens United decision, then you have McCutcheon. So because of the undue influence of money on our politics, our government is basically a handmaiden to huge multinational corporate forces, whether it be the military-industrial complex or the fossil fuel companies or big pharma or the gun manufacturing lobby. And so our politicians, too many of them, will not stand up to the NRA because they know, they don't just feel it, they're probably correct, it's not that they're wrong, that if they stand up, let's say, for an assault weapons ban, that they will lose their job, that the NRA will give so much money to an opponent, you know, and find someone to run against them if there's not someone already who will support the goals of the NRA, and then that politician will lose their job. You know what I say to that, Lisa? If it were you or if it were me, and I was told, Marianne, if you stand up for your conscience, you might lose your job, I would say, to hell with my job. I mean, what job is as important? This is exactly the problem that we're talking about. Get another job. You know, you don't have to be a politician. So the fact that Congress will not legislate an assault weapon, they will not even legislate common sense gun laws. The fact that this man, who is already on some FBI radar, the fact that I think that any military person, any non-military or police personnel can get an assault weapon, it's so insane. There is no reason to have these except to kill people.
Yeah, I don't see their use in hunting.
So right.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They're not. No. So what happens here is that psychic pain carries a message. Psychic pain carries a message just like physical pain does. And it means do something. You don't just, if you have a broken leg, you don't just take morphine, you also reset the leg. And when we have psychic pain, like we're feeling right now, it's telling us, reset your thinking.
Well, the first reaction that I'm hearing is anger, is rage, is how dare on our soil, how dare you do this?
Well, you know, how dare you do this on our soil? Yeah, the Iraqis felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The Libyans, I mean, you know, we go around invading countries, and don't you think that they're thinking, how dare you do this on our soil? I mean, it's just kind of crazy at this point. You know, our invasion of Iraq is what led to the creation of ISIL. Iraq did not have anything to do with 9/11. This had to do with the creation of ISIL. And this stuff this man called 9/11 while he was shooting to pledge his allegiance to ISIL. So it's so easy for us to say, how dare you do this? But the conscious person asks, what part have I played in this? And America has to say, what part are we playing in this? When you're letting assault weapons be in the hands of just anybody practically who wants one, and when you're not really atoning for the horror of that invasion of Iraq that made so much of this erupt, I mean, how dare they do that? I mean, like, grow up. It's happening.
But it is almost too, you're gonna fight back with me on this, but is it too late, Marianne?
This is where spirituality comes in.
Yeah.
We have to atone. We have to atone in our hearts. It's never too late. It's never too late. But America, you know, it's really interesting.
We'd have to do it as a country.
Well, it's an interesting thing, mm-hmm. Lisa, because as individuals, we're very decent people. Americans are cool people. I always say when I am traveling internationally, I always like to sit next to an American on an airplane. We're cool people, and we're decent people, and we are caring people. So as individuals, I don't find a problem. You know, I mean, we're a big country. We're not a monolith. But the basic character of the American is decent. But collectively, we have this capacity for grandiosity and denial that is almost off the charts. I mean,
true.
Who the hell do we think that we are sometimes, the way we behave internationally? And I know that we've done very, very good things in our history, too. Don't get me wrong. It's not like, or even now, it's not like we do everything wrong internationally.
No, it's, but it is the American way, what you're explaining.
It is the American what?
Way. It is definitely the American way.
What? International? What is,
yeah,
the American
to
way?
Be that, to be the leader, to be the almost bully sometimes, to be that, overcoming, dominant type of force. We have to take a quick break here, Marianne, and we can address that. What I want to address when we come back is the collective suffering also that we were talking about here as we're going through this as a nation. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with Marianne Williamson. Again, her book is called Tears to Triumph, The Spiritual Journey from Suffering to Enlightenment. And we will be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is Marianne Williamson, and we're talking about the suffering as a collective nation that we are experiencing as a result of the shooting that occurred in Orlando, as well as an entire country of trying to understand our feelings rather than numbing them or being bullies as a result of them, but really trying to understand what it means to fully be available to what we're experiencing as a nation. And this is an important conversation because it brings up not just the details of the shooting, which you're going to hear a lot about, but how we handle it and how we handle it personally and how we experience in general physical pain. And we will be back in just a moment, joined by Marianne Williamson. We're talking about Tears to Triumph and how we can be available to our suffering as opposed to suppressing or numbing it. We will be right back. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr, and my guest is Marianne Williamson. Her latest book, Tears to Triumph, describes how to move through suffering and actually be available to our suffering so that we can experience it. Now, in that, in saying that, Marianne, does that allow us to overcome it in a way that we can live with suffering rather than denying it? Is that what you're saying?
No, you transform by allowing yourself. And also, I just want to complete with one thing we were at before when you said something about the American way. I don't think the American way is that we are bullies. The fact that we are leader, we are the most powerful nation on the earth, of course we have to be leaders. And we should be a leader. And the world is a better place when America leads. And there are many examples, and World War II was certainly an example, where our military strength and our military prowess was used to help save the world, literally, from one of the greatest evils that had ever been perpetrated collectively. So the correct exercise of our power, we shouldn't apologize for our power. It's the ethical exercise of it. And also, so I just wanted to be clear about that, because I don't think it's the American way to be bullies. I just think sometimes politics gets in the way. And of course, it's politics that drives what we do military. Military people don't get to make those decisions. You know, it's you know, the commander-in-chief is the president of the United States.
And it's also our military who allows us to be free, and that is the American way,
well,
is our
many
freedom.
Many things allow us to be free. Mm-hmm. But, yes, the military are the people who put their lives on the line, literally, and the police. Mm-hmm. They put their lives on the line. For that, but it is a response, and obviously our gratitude is deep, and we can't, you know, what we have started to do in the United States is that we don't take care of business, and then when all these things blow up, we say to the military, "Will you go fix it?" You know, when our foreign policies are not true to what we should be as a nation, and then things blow up in our face. You can't just then expect the military to be clean up after our mess. So I think all of us, every citizen, needs to be to think of ourselves as partially responsible for the freedom of this nation. That's why all of us should be involved in politics. That's why President Eisenhower said every American should see politics as a part-time profession. That's why we should all vote. We can't just expect the military and to just take care of everything. We all have to consider ourselves responsible for the welfare of this nation and our freedom. As far as suffering is concerned, and what I talk about in my book, Lisa, is the fact that all the great religious stories. All the great religious systems have suffering at their core. Buddha said that life is suffering. In the Old Testament, God sent Moses to rescue, to deliver the Israelites because they were suffering as slaves under Pharaoh. And of course, Jesus suffered on the cross. So the idea of human suffering is core to all the great religious messages, all of them. And, you know, suffering didn't just begin. It's not like heartbreak just started. It's not like catastrophes just started. What just started was our calling it a disease rather than a product of the human mind when it has deviated from the love that is the truth of who we are. When the human mind, when it deviates from a connection to a source, a creator, God is whatever, however we define it, something bigger than ourselves, a divine creator. And when you think of yourself as an isolated creature with no deep responsibility to a higher power, no deep responsibility to life around you, then you do things, you think things and do things that cause suffering for yourself and others. So we can't just treat the symptoms, we have to treat the cause. And the cause has to do with this deviation from our true selves, deviation from our hearts, deviation from love. And that, and so if you just numb your suffering, then you don't get to the deeper point of it. Like if you, you know, when people, what are people usually suffering over? We're suffering because of a bitter divorce, or we're suffering over a professional failure, or we're suffering over the death of a loved one. We're suffering over a child in trouble. We're suffering over a bankruptcy or financial ruin. Or we're collectively suffering, like we're all of us are doing today about the events in Orlando. In all of those cases, the suffering is not a disease. The suffering is part of being human.
What about PTSD and suffering from traumatic events?
Let's talk about PTSD. We have, with our returning veterans, obviously some of the problems that these men and women have is brain injury, that is leading to the depression mm-hmm. that so many of them are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it is soul injury. Think what happens with these people. Obviously, the military has to train them to, for their own sake, to be killing machines. I mean, they have to do that. I mean, it's war. But what happens then is these people come home and think what they have been through. They have had people trying to kill them. They have had to try to kill people, and they've had to kill people. Mm-hmm. They've seen friends, and we can't even imagine the kind of bonding that occurs when you're in war with someone. I don't think you and I can even imagine that. And imagine that your buddies that you're in this with are killed in front of your eyes.
Yes, yes.
So these veterans that are coming home with this horrible, horrible depression, mm-hmm. so and it's a soul injury. It's not just that
right.
people talk about, well, there's brain injury. Yes, there is brain injury with some of these people, for sure. But this is a soul injury. And if you look to just the pharmacological, what we've got is 23 veterans a day are committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a serious, obviously, to say it's a serious problem is an understatement. But the FDA warns that antidepressants in people 25 years old and younger increase rather than decrease suicidal ideation. So a lot of these veterans are being given antidepressants.
And it's the same exact situation, that it's just going from the frying pan to
in
fire.
Some cases, and also there's some people working in the VA and elsewhere doing heroic work helping these veterans who are injured in so many ways, including soul injury. But soul injury cannot be treated with a pharmaceutical.
What can it be treated with?
It's treated with meditation. It's treated with prayer. It's treated with serious spiritual practice.
Community.
It's treated with community. Mm-hmm. It's treated with love. It's treated with human connection. This is what we have to do. It's treated by some of them, you know, so many of these returning veterans, they have so much to say about what they've been through. There should be so many arts programs. There should be so many meditation programs. There should be so many poetry magazines, believe it or not, that are for people to write, and there need to be so many ways for people to heal their souls when they come home from war. It's not just a lost limb. It's not just a brain injury. It's what has happened to damage these people's souls.
Soul, yes.
And that is where a lot of this terrible, terrible depression is coming from. And so just to slap, once again, some people use antidepressants after very, very serious, well-considered, long-time thought-out work with psychiatrists or psychologists. And obviously psychotherapeutic drugs can be helpful with, bipolar or schizophrenia. But what's happening today is an epidemic of casual antidepressant use where, somebody just says to their general practitioner, once or twice, I'm going through a rough time, and the GP gives them an antidepressant, says, let's put you on something for a while. And, sometimes people say, well, they need to do that so they won't commit suicide. The big story, the big elephant on the table at this point in America is how many people committed suicides who were on antidepressants.
Especially under 25 years old, yes.
The risk is higher for mm-hmm. suicidal ideation, and the FDA warns of this.
Is this something that we actually could change by having the awareness around meditation, community, even brain entrainment technologies that are available that really do make the difference in the brain?
Well, I think that when this whole issue of brain chemistry, depression is brain, it's different than sadness, it's brain chemistry. This is, first of all, how many people do you know that have been diagnosed, have been prescribed an antidepressant, had their brain chemistry changed, checked? First?
Tested, yeah,
it's
you can't.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But there is no blood test for depression. Clinical depression is a questionnaire. So we've been told this story that depression is different. Now, first of all, I want to say something. I have been clinically depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in a deep, deep, deep darkness twice in my life that was greater than just deep sadness. It absolutely was.
Did you feel you could get out of that yourself?
No, I felt I could get out of it with God's help. Mm-hmm. And the first time, very much so with a psychiatrist's help. But when he gave me a prescription for medicine, for pills, I remember throwing them back at him the next time I saw him, saying, if I wanted to do drugs, I could get better ones myself. Thank you, doctor. But this is what I had to do. I had to face what caused the depression. Sometimes it's in the dark night of the soul. This is what spiritually is called the dark night of the soul. That's what St. John of the Cross called it, dark night of the soul. And what's painful about these dark nights of the soul are the things that you have to face. Sometimes it's like I was talking about, okay, let's say something like a bitter divorce. Let's say someone has left you. Well, I have to tell you something. In relationships and any that I've been in and any that I've seen, it's never all just one person. And sometimes the pain in a broken relationship is not just having been left. Sometimes the pain is seeing what part we might have played in that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when we lost our job, it's that we have to face not only the betrayal, we have to face not only the fear, but we have to face what part might I have played in that. It's like we're talking about with Orlando. This is what the ego mind does not want to do. What part might we have played in this? And when I know in my own life, it's from the times that I've been deeply, deeply depressed that I've learned lessons like don't treat life like a joke because it's not one. It's been from being deeply depressed in my life that I've learned that other people's feelings matter as much as my own, that I've learned to be more responsible, that I've learned to take love and life more seriously, that I've learned that to show up and to rise to the occasion in life. My mother has died, my father has died, my sister has died, my best friend has died. You know what I've learned from that? I've learned to really, really appreciate what remains. I've learned mm-hmm. from those experiences that this one physical life does not go on forever. And so appreciate it when you have it. I've learned from these dark times in my life that don't take love for granted. That's what we do in our society. We treat everything like it's disposable. We take life for granted. We take things for granted. We take our children for granted. We take our love for granted.
True, true.
Our marriages for granted. We're not inhabiting our lives fully. And this is what creates suffering, because we have to learn in life, and sometimes you learn it through pain, that choices matter and decisions matter.
But how do you make sense of something where you feel there's people that are celebrating in a club, or kids sitting in a school, or watching a movie? Those people are living life. They are taking their life and enjoying it, and they're the ones that are getting killed, and
Well,
other innocent victims as well.
Evil exists. Evil exists. But I want to say something also to that. When you mentioned before, how can people coming over here? The man who did this in Orlando was born in the United States.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He was an American citizen who was born here.
Oh, yes. And Columbine as well. I mean, I'm saying, why innocent people, when innocent victims become so severely hurt and killed, that those that survive them live with this pain of, it's a collective pain, it's a collective sadness.
Well, of course it's a horrible pain, and of course it's a collective sadness, mm-hmm. but I also think...
And children. Mm-hmm.
Of course it is, but even with collective, if you look at something like the rise of Hitler, Hitler could never have done what he did had it not been for many people who, although they did not have the thought themselves or the action themselves to do something that evil, did not have the moral fiber to say no to it. And so we can't guarantee that hideous people, you know, people with evil intent will not be born. We can't guarantee that. But we can work every day of our lives to create a society which dramatically lessens the chance that evil intent will have a chance to grow. And that's why you think much more deeply about the consequences that are likely to occur if you do something like the invasion of Iraq and the way that was done by our president at the time.
Well, if you think about someone like Hitler, those people didn't have choice. I mean, they didn't.
Who didn't have choice?
When you're talking about the Holocaust, those people didn't know. They didn't have choice.
Oh, certainly. Whoa. I'm not talking about the people who were put in the concentration camps. That's not who I was talking about. I'm talking about all the people in Germany and elsewhere who joined in with Hitler.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Of course. I'm not talking about the victims of Hitler. I was talking about the people who conspired with Hitler.
Yeah, I was talking about victimhood. I was talking about the collective sadness that we have around the innocent victims all over the world, not just incidents that we're talking about here.
The point is to take that sadness and let it change you. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Take this sadness, and that's what I meant before. What I'm afraid of is that we're going to do with this one what we do with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love how we all say prayers for the victims. I love how we pray. We allow ourselves to pray after tragedy has happened. We need to pray more before tragedy happens for God's wisdom. We need to pray for God's love. And we need to not just talk about God. We need to remember that God is love and that God says love each other. You know, when Buddha said life is suffering, then he gives an eightfold path, the way we need to be to become enlightened. When God sent Moses to deliver the Israelites from slavery, and then they wandered in the desert, he sent down the Ten Commandments to tell people how to live. And when Jesus suffered on the cross, you know, the point was the open heart and the love and the forgiveness that he embodied that then caused the resurrection. So the suffering that Buddha saw led to his enlightenment. The slavery of the Israelites then led to the journey to the Promised Land, and the crucifixion of Jesus then led to the resurrection. That's the point. It's a journey you take. The suffering is where it begins, and then God shows his hand. And that's why nirvana, promised land, resurrection, inner peace, enlightenment, they all speak to the same thing. And that's what happens when human consciousness is lifted by God to that higher place. And then where you get to is to the changes that you need to make in yourself so you don't cause so much suffering to begin with. That's the thing. Let these mm-hmm. kids, these awful deaths in Orlando, let them not have been in vain.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. We let all these horrible things happen, but they're in vain if we don't change because of them. And that's the truth, and it's no different in our collective life than it is in our individual life. Did you learn anything? When I have had my times of deep sadness in my life, and even the two times that were definitely what you call clinical depression, the point is I changed. And the pain had to do with some of the things
you.
I had to look at.
The pain changed you, absolutely.
The pain can change you. Because in every situation, you have a choice. Are you going to be bitter or are you going to be better? Are you going to be a victim or are you going to be a victor? Are you going to learn a way to live so that you don't create so much suffering in the future?
This is how peace is ultimately created, yes. We're going to actually take another quick break, and we're going to come back with Marion Williamson, continuing this conversation, Tears to Triumph. This is Lisa Garr, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.